24/7 comedy radio.
They are savages.
All comedy, all the time.
Step out of that shit like a homeless man trying to change his life. We do it so fresh, and we do what the fuck we want to do.
The Green Room is brought to you today by Amazon. Click the Amazon link on SeanTGreen.com to support The Green Room today. And now, live from Silver Lake, California, the host of The Green Room, Sean Green!
All right, everyone, welcome to The Green Room. We're doing it live here in the Silver Lake Studios on SeanTGreen.com, presented by our good friends over at 247comedy.com. Make sure you head on over there. You can check out 24/7 streaming stand-up comedy any day of the week, any hour of the day, plethora of AM, FM affiliates, and of course, you can get the iHeartRadio app, number one comedy channel over on there, and as Logan said, we're also partnered up with the good folks over at Amazon. I know what you're thinking. Hey, Sean, I just log on to Amazon.com. Wrong. You log on to SeanTGreen.com, and you click the Amazon link, which takes you to an unbelievable amount of great retail opportunities, and it helps you support your local podcast, The Green Room. And I know what you're thinking. Sean, dads and grad season is already passed me by. Well, what if your grad hasn't quite graduated yet? And, you know, just because it's not your dad's Father's Day, there's plenty of other opportunities and reasons to get dad a gift, whether it be his birthday, anniversary, fishing trip coming up, whatever it is, you can find it by going to SeanTGreen.com, hitting the Amazon link. I'd like to welcome my left-hand man, Logan Lysico. Logan, what's going on, man?
Happy Father's Day, Sean.
Happy Father's Day, indeed. We're taping this on Father's Day. Normally, we tape the show on Thursday, throw it up on a Friday, had a guest reschedule, and then, I don't know. Still up in the air about rescheduling, but I said, you know what? We owe it to the podcast audience. There's a lot of green machines out there that are dying to hear a fresh, new, hot, spanking podcast. We owe it to them, Logan, to get in the studio late on a Sunday night, winding down the week, still going to crank out a great podcast.
Absolutely.
So, what was your, give us your Father's Day rundown, Logan.
Father's Day? I don't know. I slept in, even though I didn't really go to bed that late.
what time did you go to bed?
I think one. I think I left the party pretty early last night. We had a comedy garage last night. It was pretty good. Had a pretty serious conversation last night with my girlfriend about being a father.
Whoa, Logan!
Because she's got a kid and, you know, some big issues going on in my life.
No, wait.
I went to church today, actually.
Wow.
As you know.
You got a haircut, Logan? Looks like you're trying to get your life together.
Yeah.
So now, wait. What was the conversation about?
Well, I guess I got into it. Her son started calling me daddy.
Yeah.
And that made me uncomfortable. And I told her that, and I think it hurt her feelings. And, that was a big, long, that was a fire I had to put out. And, you know, I'm pretty committed to my girlfriend. I really think we're going to get married someday. And, you know, I will raise that kid.
It is a funny expression. I'm pretty committed.
I'm committed to her.
Things are going well between you and your girlfriend.
I don't know how the future's going to go, but we're going to get married. I'm going to raise her kid. But, you know, it's still weird to have a kid is not biologically your kid call you daddy.
Now, wait, well, was there anything in particular? See, now, I didn't realize that. For me, I always thought you had to teach the kid, like, okay, this is dad. You say this when you see dad. Call this guy daddy. So the kid picked up to call you dad without ever being taught the word daddy. I mean, I guess he understood.
He was taught it in speech therapy class.
Okay.
And so I'm the adult male that's always around, so he just started calling me daddy. And I actually said that wasn't a big deal. Like, my girlfriend was kind of like, oh, is that weird or anything? I was like, nah, it's no big deal. But then this week I noticed he called me daddy a lot more. So I think by me saying it was okay, like, she kind of started calling me dad too. And, you know, it's a very – I have a stress headache right now.
Did it hit you then when he started calling you daddy? Like, wow, I guess you know, if I sign on board with this, then I got to be this kid's dad for the rest of... I mean, obviously...
I mean, I sort of knew that, but it's complicated. I mean, he has a biological dad who's out there. And I should just tell the audience right now, you know, I'm adopted, and I think that, you know, I have... I'm sympathetic to this kid, and I do feel like he's...
Do you feel karmically there's something going on where, since you were adopted, you feel like almost kind of... I mean, I guess it's different than adoption, but it's the same kind of idea of you were raised by someone other than your biological parents. Do you feel compelled to raise a kid that's not your own biologically? Or do you think it's just a happy coincidence?
I think it's a happy coincidence, but yeah, I mean, that probably lends me to it a little bit, the fact that I went through that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess it's one of those things like...
I mean, I didn't seek it out.
Right, you weren't like, hey, cruising for probably, single moms.
Yeah, no, not at all, actually. I mean, we actually went out a couple of years ago, and I broke up with her because she had a kid, and I was like, you know what, I'm not ready for that commitment, but...
And then you thought about it a little bit more, and like, yeah, all right, I'm...
you know what, yeah, I'm just going to suck it up.
I'm pretty horny, I want to hook up.
Exactly.
We get along well, it's working good enough, you know, the rest of the chicks out there, it's not working out as well, you know, yeah, it's cool, yeah.
I'm just stumbling through this life, Sean, trying to figure it out, right? I don't know what's going on.
It's a very honest statement, Logan, I appreciate your candor on the good old podcast here. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, if a girl... I think I would be kind of in your same boat where I would be freaked out if a girl had a kid. But then again, I like kids. And then it's one of those things like you get in deep enough where you're into the chick a lot and you like the kid. Then it's like, well, yeah, why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, not that this is what made my decision or anything, but, you know, you start to feel for the kid. You're not like, you know, this kid didn't do anything wrong. He deserves a family just like everybody else.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
It's kind of sad. I mean, I think most guys are, I mean, not that it's necessarily wrong, but I mean, most people are just automatically turned off by single moms, or most guys.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a combination thing of, it's like, yeah, like you said, it's a lot of responsibility. And, you know, if you're just going on a first date, it's hard to picture yourself that far down the future with this huge responsibility that you didn't create, or, you know what I mean? Like, when you're first date, you're just worried about like, oh, hey, is this chick cool? You know, hey, am I going to get laid? Like, you're just kind of like thinking very short term of like, hey, you know, just trying to have a good time. You're not thinking about marriage on the first date. At least a guy, I mean, maybe chicks go
but
that.
She is if she has a kid.
Yeah. Well,
I told her that a lot when we first started dating. I was like, you know, I feel like this is just a huge commitment. Even if it's not a commitment, it is, because biologically you have a kid and you're trying to get a mate. You're trying to get a dad, you know. I don't know. I was real paranoid about it, but
no, but I mean, there is
a truth to that.
No, yeah. I mean, and yeah, I mean, she's probably trying to find a guy that she likes and a guy that's cool, but then also like, yeah, I mean, in the back of her, I mean, not even in the back of her head, she has a kid, so yeah, why wouldn't she be thinking about, okay, hey, this is, oh, maybe this is a potential father, or hey, if this is a guy I'm going to date seriously, I'm going to have to introduce him to my kid. So, you know, that's kind of something she has to deal with the entire time as well.
Yeah.
Crazy times. Heavy Father's Day talk, Logan.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't really do much with, my dad's back east, so I just called him, said, what's up, you know.
Yeah, me too. I sent my dad an e-card because I was, I was too... I don't know. I don't want to say busy, but I just forgot to send a card. So I sent an e-card.
Now, what'd your e-card say?
It was really sensitive. It was like, you know, oh, God. I don't even remember what it said, but it said, it was just like, oh, you're my rock. You supported me.
It always is an interesting move of like how emotional to get with the dad card. You don't want to freak him out and be like, hey, man, I really love you. It's like, oh, what's going on with my son? You know, but you want it to be... You want it to be emotional, and yeah, I mean, I sent my dad, I got him a, you know, gift certificate for an online golf warehouse, and I also, you know, it comes with the, yeah, I wouldn't call it an e-card, it comes in the, now did you get like an animated e-card? How long did you?
And it's animated, so it's a cartoon, but it's also kind of emotional, which is, it's just goofy and cheesy, really.
What's the animation of?
just guys throwing babies in the air and like going fishing and stuff. It's pretty funny. But he really took it to heart. Like, I sent it to him in an hour. I was going to call him like late afternoon, but he called me like in an hour, like as soon as he opened the e-card. I was just like,
wow,
Logan, thank you for that. I was just like, yeah, I forgot to send a card. But
so yeah, that is one of those things.
It would take me 5 seconds.
With either one of your parents, I mean, generally, you know, just never having a lot of money, you always come up short on the gift end, so you feel like you got to pour it on in the emotional end.
Right.
I want to get to a point where I'm successful enough, I can just get my parents really nice gifts and let the gifts do the talking.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, Dad, here's a flat screen TV. You get the idea. I don't need to write out a card or express how I feel to you emotionally. Yeah, just let the big flat screen do the talking.
Yeah, I just send cards thanking him for the money
exactly.
that he sent me.
Hey, Dad, thanks for the helping hand. Appreciate it. Good times. All right, Logan. Man, a lot to get to.
Yeah, crazy week in a lot of ways.
All right. Well, that's funny. All right, Logan, what struck you as crazy? Because I got a list. We got plenty of clips here.
So many ways. Crazy week in sports. The Kings won the Stanley Cup.
They did.
Wait, was the Pacquiao fight this week, or last week?
But. Yeah, no, that was last Saturday. So it would be before the last time we talked about on the Green Room podcast. We talked about a little bit more in depth on sports gambling podcast, but it's a big enough event that it's worth talking about nationally. But yeah, Pacquiao was somehow defeated by this guy, Bradley, who Bradley's a likable guy. He was an undefeated boxer coming in, black guy. He was undefeated, but he didn't have a lot of knockouts going in, which is always kind of like, I mean, generally, if you're beating up on all these like lesser opponents, you should be knocking some of these guys out. So he didn't have a ton of knockouts, but he still had a perfect record coming in fighting Pacquiao. I watched the 24/7. There's that HBO documentary, 24/7, great documentary, you know, following the two fighters. Now Pacquiao's kind of taking this religious turn and he's getting more focused on God. And I don't know. Basically, it sounded like he was partying a little bit and drinking a little bit, or I don't know. It sounded like he was boozing around because he said he gave up women. But meanwhile, he had a wife for like his entire career. So he just decided to recently give up women.
Open marriage.
Well, that's a power move. When you decide on your own that you're tired of cheating.
Yeah.
Like normally it's the girlfriend or the wife that's like, hey, if you don't stop this, I'm going to leave. Maybe that happened behind closed doors, but it didn't seem to happen to Manny Pacquiao. He just decided, I'm kind of bored with just dominating boxing and being a politician. Also, he has this weird affinity for singing. And I don't think he doesn't realize that people think it's funny that he's singing.
Right.
I mean, it's funny. That's a guy who's an amazing boxer is trying to sing. And not that he has an insanely bad voice, but it's just very, very, very. It's just like,
it's just one of those strong personalities that's just interesting to the core, like in so many ways.
Yeah, he is kind of fascinating. And it's funny being out here in LA and just hanging around these kind of like liberal get togethers. And a lot of people were saying, oh my God, I'm, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm not for Pacquiao anymore after he said those anti-gay comments and, oh, I'm not for, you know, oh, I lost respect for Pacquiao. And okay, I see that side of it. My thing is, with guys like Pacquiao, he's a prize fighter. He's not a genius by any means. I assume these guys are very dumb individuals. You get punched in the face for a living. But, I mean, boxers, I think, athletes in general are not intelligent. But you got to go boxers. If I'm searching my soul for, like, takes on societal cues, I'm not going to Manny Pacquiao. That'd be the last guy that I would talk to about anything in society. I mean, first off, he is.
Just look at past boxers. George Foreman named all his kids George.
Just a personality disorder. Mike Tyson.
Yeah, Mike Tyson.
Evander Holyfield.
He was homeless for a while, right?
Oh, yeah. Mike Tyson. I mean, I don't know if he was homeless.
After he was successful.
Mike Tyson's had an insanely crazy life. But, yeah, I mean, Manny Pacquiao, he does these fights, and then he goes and sings in Las Vegas after the fight. Which I don't know if he went and sang still after he lost this decision. He lost this decision to Bradley. Everyone's saying that it was rigged in some way, and it definitely kind of makes sense that it would be rigged. Here's the thing, like, it's one of these things, it's probably going to be hard to prove because you're going to have to come at him with some physical evidence of saying, like, X, Y, and Z, these judges, because two judges scored it. It was a split decision. Two judges scored it in favor of Bradley. The other judge scored it in favor of Pacquiao, but even their scores were... Everyone that watched the fight, everyone who has any sort of affiliation with boxing said Pacquiao either won at the very least 8 rounds, probably 10 rounds out of a 12-round fight. So they people who like reviewed the tape and looked at it and they're like, the best I could, like, if I just went out of my way to give Bradley every single round, I'm saying 8-4 Pacquiao. Right. So he's losing by 4 rounds on even the most generous scorecard, and 2 judges have him scoring it, winning by 2 rounds. They asked him what he thought of the fight and did he think he won, and he said he was going to have to watch the tape.
Yeah.
Which you never hear that of a prize fighter. Everyone who's a prize fighter is just like, yeah, I murdered that guy, I bloodied him up, you saw what I did out there, you can't stop me, you can only hope to contain me. The guy was, he like broke his ankle, he severely damaged his foot. Like in the 6th round, so he was just hanging on by a thread for the majority of the fight.
Yeah, well, maybe Pacquiao's just, you know, humble because of Jesus.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Or maybe he's in on it.
Well, and I don't know. See, it's weird. It's one of these things. I don't think he would ever be, quote unquote, in on it. But also, it's one of these things. Like, it. I don't know. I don't think he would be in on it because what he would. Because
then he would have. He wouldn't have. Objectively won those 8 rounds.
Well, here's the thing.
He wouldn't have tried as hard if he
was. Well, and he didn't try to knock him out, but that's probably because he thought he was up on the scorecard, and why try and risk knocking him out? Because if you try to knock out a guy, usually you're kind of exposing yourself a little bit to, like, possibly a counterpunch. So that's why some of these guys who are up big on the scorecard just play it safe and just, you know, peck away, because they're thinking, well, I already won all these rounds. There's no way I'm going to lose the fight.
You know, this brings me back to my Taekwondo days. I went to a Taekwondo tournament, totally kicked this kid's ass, but he kept tapping me on the head with his glove. And, like, the judges all saw his tapping me on the top of the head, because that's a really obvious move, so he won the fight.
Yeah.
But I kicked that kid's ass.
No, and you know, you can say to Pacquiao, hey, man, you should have knocked him out. You want to go to the scorecard, you shouldn't go to the scorecard. You got to knock him out, because then no one can take that from you.
Yeah.
But then also, so the promoter that promoted this fight is now – he just signed Pacquiao to his promotional company. So he promoted Pacquiao and this other guy, Bradley. They already had this Bob Arum or something like that. He already had a fight set up in November that he was ready to start promoting. And it was probably going to be Pacquiao, assuming he won, versus this other guy, Marquez. But the other guy, Marquez, is promoted by a different person. So now, since it's going to end up being a rematch because Pacquiao obviously got robbed, now it's going to be Pacquiao versus Bradley, and he's going to be in on another fight where he's promoting both fighters.
So he's a student of Don King?
Well, you could see where it's like he's the one guy who can really benefit from both – from this.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Boxing is just a super corrupt sport. It's a shame because I really do enjoy watching these guys go – and battle. But, I mean, he's really got to fight Mayweather. Pacquiao Mayweather really has to go down, and it would be an exciting fight. We'll see if it ever actually happens.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people saying, like, this is why the UFC is getting big, because, you know, boxing's just so corrupt.
But it happens a lot in the UFC, too. I mean, not to this degree. This degree was pretty atrocious, but even in the UFC, guys see a fight a different way, and especially in the UFC where there's not a traditional scoring system, where at least in boxing, it should be. I mean, this fight obviously kind of throws the scoring out the window, but it's easy to see, like, okay, this guy landed this many punches, this guy did this. Whereas, like, UFC, there's so many different maneuvers, and if you didn't really have a background in mixed martial arts, you wouldn't realize, like, oh, being put in that move at that angle does way more damage than this move at that angle. I mean, some of these people fighting or judging MMA, I don't think – there's no way they could have had a history in MMA. They're too old. I mean, some of these people, the two of the guys judging the boxing match were in their 70s. It's insane. This is what drives everyone crazy in sports, is that we pay these athletes millions and millions of dollars, and in comparison, pay these refs hardly anything. So you're like, the guys reffing the NBA finals are getting $10,000 a game, which is a lot of money, but in comparison, it's not a lot compared to what the players are making or anyone else on the court, and you're making them ultimately responsible for this product. So in the NBA Finals, you get paid $10,000 a game. So now, as much as the ref wants to say he's impartial, you can't tell me that that's not in the back of the ref's head when they've, you know, when they're on game five and the other team's trying to eliminate him, where you go, oh, wait, hey, I could just give this other team a couple more calls. I get right. another game out of it. I get another $10,000. I mean,
people working for that kind of money to do that kind of job are really into that sport.
Yeah, they're really –
they're obviously going to be rooting for one of the teams.
Well, yeah, they're really into it. It's so hard not to pick – yeah, I mean, maybe they don't pick a team, but they definitely – and refs from any – if you've ever played any sort of sport, they do get personal, especially in basketball, because basketball, so many judgment calls. So if you're constantly battling with the ref, you just don't get calls. Our buddy Ryan will always kind of inevitably get into it. We play rec league basketball. He'll get into it with the ref, and then you just start seeing us not get the calls because the refs, they're petty, and they don't like being called out. They don't like to have their authority questioned. They don't like you challenging every call, and it's the same way in the NBA. Certain refs, don't favor certain guys, and that was a big reason the corrupt ref in the NBA, he claimed, I mean, I obviously he was fixing, in my mind, he was fixing the games that he officiated. He claims he wasn't, but he did admit to gambling on those games and claimed he wasn't officiating any different. But he was also betting a lot on other NBA games and was betting it and like giving tips out on betting simply on the idea of, you know, Sir X, Y, or Z ref hates X, Y, or Z player. I know that. I know he has a history against these guys, and he just does it. There's this one ref, Danny Crawford, I think. Something Crawford is like a historically bad ref against the Dallas Mavericks, and just is the record is just off the charts and just hates Dallas, hates the players. And it's great because if you know he's going to be reffing that game, you know, throw a little money against the Mavs. But now that's one of the things they stopped doing was that they would like, and they wouldn't announce who was reffing the game ahead of time. So that was one of the safeguards that they did. But really, these guys need to be full-time guys. They need to be making more money because A, then they'd be less corruptible. And B, they would, even if they're not reffing games, have them do like go to ref school or do something where they're staying busy just so that, I mean, yeah, you turn it into a full-time job. Yeah, maybe it's not a full-time job right now, but turn it into a full-time job. You know, the NFL makes $7 billion a year. You should be able to pay the refs a little bit more just so that they have more film time. They're studying more. They're going through more scenarios. Like, you can get better at this kind of stuff.
I agree.
So, glad I won you over on that, Logan.
What else you got on the old docket? Sounds like you had some. When I said this was a crazy week, sounds like you had.
Oh, it's a crazy week all around, Logan. Bristol Palin, daughter of Sarah Palin, she's got a new reality show coming out. I found this clip online, pretty hilarious. So basically, now I don't know. Listen to this and tell me if you think it's staged or not. I. Kind of seems staged to me, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's real. She's over at Saddle Ranch, which is a it's kind of like a touristy bar out here in Los Angeles.
I mean, yes, it's definitely staged before I even hear it.
Right.
If it's at camp.
Saddle Ranch. Yeah, they Saddle do Ranch. Filming there. So Sarah Palin, I guess her reality show is just like, hey, I'm a single mom, hanging out, you know, trying to find my next Logan. And she's
– Oh, no.
She's out
it's
there
be a saying now.
trying to find my Logan. No, she's just riding the bull. Her friends are there just laughing. Like, it seems like the most boring reality show. Like, at least if you're going to the Saddle Ranch, normally in a reality show, you're like, okay, some crazy drunk hookups or something. But it's just Sarah Palin's daughter riding the bull. Okay, fine. And then a guy starts yelling at her. It starts basically heckling her about her mother. Did you? Now, I don't know if you could catch all that, but he goes, did you ride Levi like that? Your mother's a whore. It literally, now, the audio is not great because it's in a big, wide Saddle Ranch, but tell me if this does not sound like Will Ferrell circa the Celebrity Jeopardy sketch on SNL.
What'd you say?
Your mother's a devil, dude.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's the devil.
What'd she do wrong?
She lives, she breathes. If there is a hell, which I don't believe there is one, she will be.
I love how you had to point that out.
Oh, my God.
If there is a hell,
people like that are so ridiculous.
If you don't believe.
What'd she do wrong? She breathes. I mean, I don't like Sarah Palin, but.
Right.
That guy's an idiot.
But here's the thing. If you're motivated to yell out, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big Sarah Palin fan, but if I saw her daughter in public, I wouldn't call her a whore. Right. And if I did, I would at least have like some sort of good reason. Like maybe she stole my dad away from my mom or something. Like,
yeah.
I would just say, I probably wouldn't say anything. I would just be like, hey, that's hilarious. Bristol Palin's over there. Her mom's a whore. You guys know that. Like, I would say it maybe to my friends, joking around. But to yell out, to call, like, she's a 20-year-old chick. Yell out and call her a whore?
Well, this guy's obviously, he wants attention. But then once he gets it, he just has nothing to say.
Well, yeah, it's great.
She breathes. She exists. If there was a hell, which, by the way, I don't believe there's a hell. But if there was...
I love
that's
how
where she belongs.
I love how you're going to clarify that. Well, then your threat loses all meaning. If you don't believe in hell, Logan, I wish you would rot in a cupcake unicorn factory, all right? Now, I know that it doesn't exist, but if it did, I would hope you would rot there.
Your mother's a devil, dude.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's the devil.
What? That's another weird thing. Who calls like a 20-year-old chick dude? It's like a 40-year-old guy. Why would you call her dude?
She do wrong.
She lives. She breathes. If there is a hell, which I don't believe there is one, she will be there.
Okay, why is that?
She's evil. She is.
All right, is it because you're a homosexual?
I love the dramatic boom. Is it because you're a homosexual?
I'm imagining it cut to him and he was speechless at that
point. A gas. Yeah. I mean, the guy probably...
Well, I don't want to be homophobic here, but I'm not gay.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Bristol Palin was probably barking up the right tree. He seemed a little effeminate. I don't know. Maybe
he sounded... I mean, I didn't see the video, but he sounded like a bro, like a frat bro.
Yeah, I don't know. He seemed a little... Like, when he was doing the explanation of, like, you just... I mean, the whole fact that he had to point out that if hell did exist, and that's like... That just...
It's so Hollywood.
Yeah, it strikes me as a very... Yeah, maybe he's just a super liberal guy, but it strikes me as kind of like an effeminate, liberal, possibly gay thing to say. Just to constantly point out that, you know, the same way that someone says, oh, God bless you when you sneeze. Oh, I'm actually an atheist. I don't acknowledge it. It's just kind of like...
Right. I mean, I don't want to out Ryan here, but he's told me he's basically agnostic or doesn't believe in God, but he wouldn't go out of his way to, like, say shit like that or, like, point it out.
Well, no, like I mean, that's the thing. If you're truly, that's why I don't understand atheists who get so fired up and so, oh my God, they get so like torn up by it. If you don't believe something.
People are angry at God. It's like they do believe in God and they're mad at him.
yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, if you're really over that person, like let's say you got broken up by a chick or you got dumped or whatever. If you're really over that person, say it doesn't matter, then why would you still be upset? In the same way that atheists, why are you so upset? If people believe in something that doesn't exist, then if anything, that's just a relief for you that you don't have to waste your time, quote unquote, believing in it. Yeah. Why does that? It's the same way atheists are kind of like a lot of like homophobes in the sense that why should it bother you? You know right. what I mean? Like really, you have no vested interest in it. And their argument is, the atheist argument is that, oh my God, they create wars and it's all about the government. But
then they themselves are so venomous. I mean, like this guy, for example, I mean, he's a dumbass, but he's calling someone a whore and her mother's the devil. It's just like, that's very hateful.
He didn't point out that he doesn't believe in the devil. So wait, you believe in the devil, but not hell? Yeah, I mean, their argument is so hilariously convoluted.
Did you ever think this reality show would open up such a deep conversation on your podcast?
Oh, I knew it, Logan. That's why I did it. I go out of my way to select provocative material. And yeah, okay, is it annoying that she's a reality TV star for a guy who's been trying to get on TV for a long time? Yeah, it's annoying. It's annoying that people who work at pawn shops are now just another breed of celebrity. Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah.
It's annoying that Storage Lockers is not only one show, but a genre of shows now. It's just like different guys working in storage lockers. I could have got in on the ground floor of the storage locker game years ago. I could have had a sweet SAG after card. Could have been rolling. It could be, hey, guys, some stand-up comedy from Sean Green from Storage Wars. Like, oh, you know, and there's just me riffing about different things we found in random storage lockers. That format of show is just so aggravating. I mean, I know it should just be like, Sean, why does TV get you mad? Well, because I'm trying to succeed in television. So, yes, that does kind of anger me. And I know it shouldn't. You should just get over it. But, yeah, I mean, the Jersey Shore stuff, at least I could see, okay, at least that's provocative. At least that's taboo. At least it's like, oh, my God, this is kind of crazy behavior. There's something exciting, quasi-interesting about it. I understand. Something out of the ordinary. These are just taking the most mundane blue-collar jobs.
Yeah, when I was in college for film video studies, I had a job that involved a storage locker. And when I went to that storage locker and the manager was cleaning his shirt with Windex, I wasn't exactly jealous of his job. I was like, good, I'm glad I'm going to college so I won't have to work here. And now the tables have turned.
Yeah,
he's
now you're
star
like
of his own reality show.
Hey, man, what do I got to do to get in this storage locker game? Oh, you guys are, and they're all just like the shittier the job, the higher chance it has to being on television. That to me is not interesting. Guys just working is not interesting. There's a reason you're a logger and not a stand-up comedian because you don't have much of a personality. No offense, you're good at logging. That's a skill. I get it, but just watching people log is not. It's just
and even
weird.
If you don't even have a job and you're borderline homeless, you can be star of your own show called Hoarders.
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. That's really when I got that's one of the funnier things I've seen out in L.A. was I was doing a stand-up comedy show with a guy, and they intro him, and they go, oh, you guys might have seen this guy on A&E. He listed his cable TV credit. I'm like, watching this guy, he's a horribly bad stand-up comic, and I was like asking around, I was like, do you guys know what comedy show? That was my first mistake. What comedy show is on A&E? They're like, oh, no, it's Hoarders on A&E. Oh, I was like, oh, my God. So he's on Hoarders, and he's using that as his TV credit to introduce people into a stand-up comedy. I don't know what was more offensive from a comedy point of view. Seeing that guy use Hoarders to intro himself at a stand-up comedy show or Cato Kaelin using the fact that he was on 2020 with Barbara Walters as part of his TV credits.
I've done two shows with that guy. One of them was on your show, actually, right?
Yeah. I mean, Cato's a nice guy.
Yeah, he is a nice guy, but you would think he would be trying to get away from the OJ case, but he loves to bring it up and talk about it. It's just like, what? No wonder you're not more successful, dude. You're like latching onto that. Like, but he claims to be that he wishes that wasn't what made him famous, but then that's all he wants to talk about.
Yeah, I think he's self-aware enough that he realizes he has to say that he doesn't wish that's what, but also like understands that everyone who's been talking to him for the past 17 years, it's been somehow related to the O.J. Simpson trial. Yeah. So he's just like, okay, I can talk about that more.
Yeah.
And dude, also, I don't know what Cato Kaelin, what his workout regimen is. That should be what he should be known for. The guy fucking looks amazing.
He looks
exactly
the same as he did during the case.
Yeah, he looks exactly. I mean, we're talking, let's see, 83. I want to say I was like 96. I want to say 96 was probably the verdict. That sounds about right.
I think so.
Yeah, because I was in seventh grade, so I was probably 12 or 13, born in 83. So, yeah. He looks almost better because he's got like, he doesn't have that dumb surfer haircut. His skin looks amazing. He's just super healthy, totally sober. He's got a hot wife. He's living.
He could be a Ryan Seacrest. Like, it's conceivable.
Yeah. No, I think he kind of, yeah, no, he's likable. But yeah, he basically, he probably might have had that career track just because, I mean, give it up to Ryan Seacrest as much as I like to shit on him. the guy is just really driven. I mean, the guy is really driven, and there's a million kind of dudes like that with, you know, whitened teeth and frosted tips that are just out there, but he kind of grinded it out more. And there are, you know, there are plenty of guys like Cato who probably could do that same job. See, that's the thing. That's why you almost have to give it up to Ryan Seacrest and the fact that anyone literally could have done that job. And he figured out how to not only get that job that everyone could do, but another job that anyone could do, right, and another job that literally he has five jobs that anyone could do. But for whatever reason, he's convinced people that he's the only guy that can do it and commanded a nice salary. So in that sense, the guy is a savvy business person. You kind of almost have to give it up to him.
Yeah.
That being said, his...
he does not have a unique stage presence at all.
No, he has no voice, but that's...
work ethic.
Yeah, he has no voice, but he said he's fine with being bland. He wants to be vanilla, which... hey, a lot of people like vanilla. That's fine. That's
worked
his...
for Carson Daly, too. He's got to be the most boring person I've ever seen on TV.
Carson Daly has a little bit more going on than Ryan Seacrest. But
why? Because he paints his fingernails?
Yeah, that's interesting, Logan. All right?
That's
sorry.
Though.
You want to talk about the Kings won the hockey championship. And, man, you could just not have a more perfect storm of fair weather fans, people who know nothing about hockey and don't give a shit about hockey, and then people that are willing to hop on a bandwagon. Like, this was just the perfect storm in Los Angeles. And I was in the car, and we were listening to Ryan Seacrest, not my choice. And Ryan Seacrest was on the air, and he was just like,
oh no.
He was just talking Kings hockey, which is very confusing because he's no idea what, he's just no idea what he's talking about. I mean, I'm by no means a hockey expert, but at least can have a conversation about it. Hey, so Kings hockey, yeah, go Kings. All right, Kings. And then he just starts going off on this tangent about whether or not hockey players have fit bodies.
Oh, God.
And I don't know. Obviously, everyone kind of jokes that he's gay, but I don't even know. I
thought he was straight, but then when you mention that, I don't know. I mean, I don't.
Well, no, he's. I mean, he's got a lot of.
I think he just looks gay, but when he talks, he sounds straight. But
he's got a lot of kind of quasi-gay attributes. You know, guys who well manicured, care about how their hair looks, dress well, that kind of stuff. But really, I don't think he's a gay guy. He's just kind of like L.A. straight. You get that a lot in Los Angeles from guys who just like guys like clearly been doing Botox and he's got, you know, veneers and like a well put together outfit. I mean, you see a lot of guys in outfits in Los Angeles who are straight, but just my gaydar was broken as soon as I came into Los Angeles.
Guys who use the word outfit.
Right. A lot of hair product going on. Very confusing for a guy like myself. I'm just a straight shooter, Logan. You know how I am.
Yeah.
All right. So, Logan, I know you're all over the hip-hop community and what's going on.
Of course.
Big beef in the New York City nightclub. Chris Brown and Drake getting into it.
It started when Brown sent a bottle of champagne over to hip-hop star Drake and his 15-member entourage. These two apparently have something other than music in common. Drake briefly dated Brown's ex, Rihanna, after the couple broke up in 2009. But recently, Rihanna has been spotted with both of them. According to some witnesses, Thursday, Drake sent the bottle back to Brown with a note saying, "I'm still expletive the love of your life. Deal with it."
So, of course, melee ensued. Sounds like both their posses got into it. They were throwing.
Sounded like Drake was being a jerk in that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you wanted to?
Well, I don't know really anything about either of them except that Chris Brown beat up Rihanna, who's the love of my life.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Drake is having sex with the love of your life as well as Chris Brown's. So, yeah, Chris Brown dated Rihanna for a while. He beat her up pretty bad. Then they broke up. Now it sounds like there's been rumors of them kind of getting together. Then Drake, this other guy who's another kind of soft dude. Basically, he grew up in Canada. I think he's a white guy, right? Or maybe he's half white, half black. He grew up on like a kid's TV. He's basically like a child star in Canada. He was on this like Canada soap opera. He played a guy in a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
And then for whatever reason, you know, he got the right demo to the right producer. He did a song with Eminem and then just kind of blew up.
This is why I'm not into hip hop anymore. In like the early 2000s, hip hop was great, but this is
back when hip hop was real, Logan.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So anyway, I was at my DUI class, and the my teacher is pretty hilarious. She's kind of like a basically like a Queen Latifah, but like shorter hair and kind of butcher. She wears like, you know, Dickies and she, like, you know, kind of heavy set black chick, but, you know, real nice. She calls everyone baby and sweetheart. And then she'll like mix it up by like real, being real ball busting. Like, oh, wait, where was your receipt? Where was your? Oh, it's okay, baby. I got it right here. I got it right. Oh, you're like, she goes back and forth of being like real ball buster and then really sweet and nice. She's just taking attendance, and out of nowhere, she just goes, Chris Brown and Drake fighting up in the club over pussy. Pussy everywhere. They be up busting each other's head up for pussy. They want a pussy and come get this pussy right here.
Oh, my God.
Everyone's like, well, there's kind of a difference between your pussy and Rihanna's pussy. No offense, teacher. Professor DUI. I was just laughing so hard. And, oh, my God. Yeah, the DUI class is hilarious because you think, okay, you're going to – basically all it is videos. And you think, like, oh, it's going to be instructional, boring videos. No, we watched Intervention Season 3 on DVD, watched episode of Cops. And you watch, like, an episode of Cops, it's like, oh, hey, what'd you learn from this episode? I don't know. Don't be a black guy smoking crack in Florida. Like, I don't know. It's nothing to do. Like, a lot of these have nothing to do with drinking or driving or alcohol at all. We watched the A&E biography of Al Capone. And it's like, wait, this guy made he made millions and millions of dollars off of alcohol. He regretted nothing. His only mistake was not wearing a condom when he had sex with that prostitute, because then he got syphilis, and that eventually killed him.
Yeah, other than that, I'm sure that documentary glorified him.
Oh, yeah. Dude, there's a restaurant in Chicago named Capone's. And, you know, now it's like a tourist landmark of a guy who made his living off of selling bootleg liquor and murdering people. It's pretty crazy that it's weird. Like, there's a certain window where, okay, violence is somehow glorified and, like, it's almost like cartoony, and then people are fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird thing. Obviously, they're never going to have, like, a, hey, the Pakistani pub with all your favorite Islamist extremists. Hey, these are the guys that flew the, you know.
OJ's.
Exactly. Yeah. The OJ's sports bar. Just orange juice. And then, you know, whatever you do, don't leave your glasses at the sports bar. Because then someone will return it. And then as they return it, you'll be murdered by OJ. Yeah. OJ's. I mean, it's basically the same thing. In OJ's defense, OJ only killed two people. Al Capone murdered a lot of people.
Yeah, I just watched this documentary called Cocaine Cowboys about all these murders, and I'm just like, whoa, that's so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
they made Miami.
Yeah. You know why there's so many banks in Miami, man? Because of the coke.
Yeah.
We had to weigh the money. We were making so much of it. It's like, all right, this is not really deterring anyone from doing drugs. It's basically deterring them from working with crazy Colombians who will slit your throat if you look at them cross-eyed. Oh, my God. Logan, sometimes I can't. Okay, let's see. Oh, no, this I found enjoyable. Tax time. This woman, well, let's see. I think most of it's kind of laid out here.
Someone issued more than $2 million in a tax refund to a Salem woman living in a small, inexpensive apartment. Investigators say she deserved nowhere near that amount.
Well, Reggie, as shocking as the massive illegal refund, wait till you hear how the multi-million-dollar mistake was found. And it's unclear what, if anything, will happen to the employee who issued the huge return. And the way this all came to light, Reese lost the credit card with all that money loaded on it and applied for a replacement.
Okay, so basically, this woman just went on TurboTax and filled out whatever number she wanted, basically working it out so she could get a $2.1 million refund. Meanwhile, she's living in some shitbox apartment in Oregon.
Wow. And she gets it processed.
Yeah, they processed it. She get it put on a prepaid debit card. Went on like a spending spree where she was, but I mean, she bought like the dumbest, like the most hilarious white trash stuff of like new wheels for her Dodge. She bought a new Dodge Caravan. That was one of her purchases, like a $40,000 minivan. She bought like new rims for it, and she lost the debit card. So she reapplied to find out the reapply for the lost debit card, and that's when they found out. Otherwise, she might have gotten away with this scot-free.
That's insane.
Now, this is what's crazy, because normally you can get mad at the government for wasting our money and this and that, but usually the government is very good when it comes to collecting your money. Very on top of issuing the proper citations, making sure you pay those citations, you know, setting up all that thing, making it easy for you to give them money. Or, you know, and very consequently, very tough for you to get money back out of the government.
Right.
How do you?
Oh my God! The system, but then
I wish you would have seen. Like, I mean, the interviews that sell the in the news story weren't that great, but the just the expressions of on the faces of these IRS employees, just pure panic. Like pure, they realized they had to comment on it, but just realizing there was no way out of this.
Oh,
all I can think of one guy's like, all I can say is that it triggered a review process. And we missed it. It's like human error.
Wow.
And it's the government, so who knows? This guy might not even lose his job. $2.1 million.
That's insane.
I mean, it's insane for a lot of reasons. A, it's an insane amount of money, but yeah, like they said.
But then she lost the card. She was smart enough to finagle that, and then she just fucking lost.
Here's a great, for anyone listening from the IRS. First off, I'm working on it. Secondly, if you're issuing a $7 million refund to a person with who also has like 5A in their address, maybe it's time to investigate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're getting a $2.1 million refund, you probably have a standalone address. I'm just guessing. That did not trigger.
Maybe she had a P.O. box or something. Maybe.
Yeah, but no.
I can't imagine.
You look at the picture, Logan. You can just tell
She didn't think it through.
No, she was not a smart woman. I mean, I'm going to judge this book by its cover. She's just a really fat, chubby chick who did not seem intelligent at all. I mean, obviously, she was intelligent enough to get $2.1 million somehow, so she was smart enough for that. But yeah, obviously, she didn't plan it out that much, and she just had TurboTax and was just like. It's weird. People get detached kind of from the computer where it doesn't feel real for some reason. Like, hey, I'll just type in these numbers. I mean, TurboTax or any tax generating software, you can just type in any numbers and it'll say like, okay, this is what your refund should be.
Right.
So she probably took some pill. I'm, you know, obviously making all this up. Maybe she just was hanging out. Looks like she has a drinking problem, eating problem for sure. And just got real liquored up, boozed up. Was like, I'll just throw some numbers in. Wow, look at that return, $2.1 million. I'll just hit this button, finish, go to bed, see what happens. What's the word? They'll probably deny it, and I'll say I accidentally hit the wrong numbers, or I didn't know what I was.
Extra zeros.
Yeah, some fat, dumb chick from Oregon living in a shitbox apartment. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm no genius. She probably could have got away with it. I mean, the thing is, I think you can't plead ignorance in the law, but you can definitely plead that you can definitely say that like I'm dumb and clerical error. I mean, think about it. If you threw on a couple extra zeros in your tax return, I mean, who's to say that that wasn't an accident? Where you get really screwed is when you buy the Dodge Caravan with the card and don't put two and two together and realize you shouldn't have $2.1 million. I think in filing a return that's false, that's not, I don't know. She might have had some wiggle room of just like sending in a false return and just pleading ignorance. But once you start spending the money, then you're like, all right, clearly you knew what was going on.
Yeah, but you know, then what's the point of filing the false claim anyway?
Right. I'm just telling you, like, she didn't really have much to lose, it seemed like, in filing the false claim. But then once she got a hold of it, she was like, it worked.
Yeah.
And it did. She could have been in Mexico. How do these people not know about Mexico? Have they not watched, what's that great prison movie? Shawshank Redemption?
Right.
Have you not seen Shawshank Redemption, you dumb lady? She lived really close to Canada. She could have easily just went over to Canada and said, hey, I'm here for a vacation, eh? Okay, come on in. You're in Canada. Chill out.
There's a celebrity that's in Canada right now evading taxes. The guy that's in all the vacation movies. I forgot his name.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he can't come into America or he's gonna go to prison.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of crazy stuff. He said like the government was trying to kill him. Oh man, the name's escaping me as well. We're not great with names on this program. He's the crazy uncle in a Christmas vacation. But speaking of crazy defenses, one of the defenses is now I don't have the exact name of the condition, but. It's like some version of hyper emotional, hypersensitivity, something like that. And basically they're trying to use that as part of the Jerry Sandusky's defense in saying that like his love letters to these victims were just a part of him being overly emotional. And they were actually cleared to let a therapist come in and speak of this possible mental condition. Meanwhile, everyone in the newspaper is saying like this is kind of like an antiquated, even like diagnosis that no one uses, and they're just really grabbing at straws. I mean, it sounds like the testimony's just been pretty crazy. Just one person after the next just going through graphic detail of what went on. And now it sounds like they also have a smoking gun as far as there was an email or a letter basically between Tim Curley and the Graham Spaniard, the president, and the other guy who is being charged with perjury. The three guys who were – I don't think Graham Spaniard is being charged with perjury. I could be wrong. I think it's just two of the other guys. And basically there was a letter saying that they kind of knew what was going on with Jerry Sandusky but didn't want to turn him in for humane reasons, which is just insane.
Humane reasons?
Yeah, I guess because he was an old guy and, hey, he's fucking kids, you know. Hey man, it'd be inhumane for us to.
Guys do.
Hey, it'd be inhumane for us to turn in this horrific monster.
What?
I don't know. I mean, I could just. I feel like I've spent plenty of time on the podcast ranting and raving on it, but I feel like it's also something that you should talk about this stuff. You shouldn't just say, like, I mean, no one wants to talk about it because it's uncomfortable, and it should be uncomfortable. It's horrible, but you should also just not kind of turn a blind eye. In the same way that coward Joe Paterno did, and just turning the blind eye and kind of just like not doing everything you can to stop it, because then it leads to people not reporting it. It leads to people just saying like, hey, I don't want to talk about it. But if people stood together, came together, and were just like more open about declaring how insanely wrong this was, it would empower the victims. It would make them feel better about coming out.
Yeah, even if he didn't directly hush people, just by not saying anything, you kind of, and you're the leader of, you know, the team, well, you kind of give out vibe of like, you know, you probably should keep silent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously Paterno should have done a lot more. And it's funny, a lot of these kids, they ask them, you know, the defense of Jerry Sandusky, they're trying to say like, well, why didn't you come out and say this earlier? You know, they're trying to say like, you know, all 27 of these people are all in it for the money, which, I mean, listen, to like admit in front of a courtroom and in front of the public and your friends and your family that someone did this to you, I don't know, it's pretty crazy. And it's not a simple money grab in my mind.
Well, you know,
but it's funny, like they talk about they didn't come out because, oh, who would believe them? No, oh, you know, it's a powerful, successful football coach. No one's going to believe him. And in a sense, they were exactly right.
But they're also not allowed to – the prosecution isn't allowed to bring professional psychiatrists to explain why someone might keep that to themselves. Because in Pennsylvania, you're not allowed to bring like professional psychiatrists to the stand or whatever.
Yeah, well, actually, it's in regards to victims. You're not allowed to bring in – it's a good case point you brought up there, Logan. You're not allowed to bring up – personality experts or anyone to speak to the, you know, the person's psychology of the victim. I think it's a statute they put in place to basically protect the victims from coming, you know, from not coming forward. It's like, all right, you're already going through enough by admitting this. We're also going to like try to examine you psychologically and try to crack you down that way.
Yeah. But then I think that's why the defense is like, oh yeah, why didn't you come forward? Yeah. Well, you can't explain it, can you? It's like,
right.
No, we can't without an expert. Fuck.
No, yeah, I mean, You know it's bad when, like, people in the jury are openly weeping? I don't, I'm not a legal expert, but I would like to think that that's a really bad sign. When the jury starts crying when the witnesses give their testimony, I would like to think that they're going to be smart enough to realize that this guy did it and to lock him up for life. All right, let's get to a little lighthearted news here, Logan.
All right, let's do it.
The scary 911 call bringing paramedics rushing to Lindsay Lohan's room in this L.A. hotel.
I love how it's lighthearted, but even that Lindsay Lohan's also on death's door, but somehow, hey, it's a pop star. It's a little more funny.
Friday had many fearing the worst for the troubled actress.
When they went to wake her up, allegedly she was unresponsive.
But after a checkup, paramedics left and her rep quickly issued a statement. Producers were concerned when she did not come out of her room. Lindsay was examined and is fine, but did suffer some exhaustion and dehydration.
Exhaustion is keyword for overdose. Well, they always say that.
Yeah. Comedian Tess Barker had a great quote. She was like, I agree. Doing drugs is exhausting. Like, give her a break. Listen, making a movie for Lifetime is not exhausting. Watching a movie on Lifetime, possibly exhausting. You can get me on that, but making a movie for Lifetime, Lifetime original films, come on.
That's what's sad, is she was talented at one point.
And super attractive. And, you know, like, just... Yeah, I mean, she was a really good actress, kind of had all her stuff together. Yeah, I mean, it's a classic story of just teen star. Okay, she's kind of, I mean, look at her parents. Her parents are crazier than she is. The mom is like just this fame-grubbing whore. I mean, like, fame-grubbing. I don't mean it's all right. She's an older lady. I can call her a whore. But, like, you know, she's just,
bad since the Sarah
well, she, like, whores out her other daughter. Like, right. Not a whore in a sexual sense, but just, like, in a whore in, like, a desperate way of, like, I'll do any sort of media to talk about my... Like, she should not be weighing in... If you actually cared about your daughter, you'd not be weighing in on her drug use to, like, E.T. and stuff.
Yeah, you would be talking
her dad. Her dad's worse. Her dad is just, like, desperately trying to be a celebrity. Like, calls into TMZ all the time. He calls into TMZ all the time. He's on this thing. It's, like, him... some like old teen stars and Octomom, and it's a service called like Talk to a Star, and it's like $10.99 a minute, and you just get to talk to celebrities, but they're like weird celebrities, like Lindsay Lohan's dad, Octomom.
Whoa, can you record that and like put it out as a podcast or something?
I don't know, Logan. Maybe we should look into that. Actually, it's funny you say that because I don't know if you remember we had that. Well, we had the. This is fun. The Tiger Woods mistress, when we had her on, and her manager also was the same one that got on the when we had the chick on from Playboy who got arrested or lost her job working at a jail for posing in Playboy. Anyway, that same manager is now also managing Octomom and this call-in service. So maybe I'll send her an email and see if we can have Octomom call in. It's one of those things where, like, all right, I can see it being fun and, like, maybe we get the show a little publicity. But, my God, if you've ever heard that woman talk on the phone, it is insanely, insanely grating. To the point where it's, like, it's not even interesting. She's just, like, talking a mile a minute. And
I want to interview this manager.
Yeah, she sounds like a trip. Maybe we can just talk to her. All right, Logan, we got through it, banged out a podcast, took care of business, TCB. Speaking of which, guys, July 20th, huge show going down in Philadelphia, stand-up comedy at the Underground Arts Theater. I will be headlining. It'll be a great time for all. You can go to SeanTGreen.com, hit calendar, and scroll down to July 20th and get the tickets there. Or, they're on brownpapertickets.com as well. You can look it up there. You can just Google Sean Green Philly Comedy. I'm sure it'll come up. All right, Logan, you want to wrap things up with haiku?
Sure. Let's do it. Fixed. Pacquiao fight. Baby daddy issues, y'all. Managing sadness.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to The Green Room. And, make sure you guys check out the archive episodes because we have a ton of episodes on there, over 100 hours of recorded episodes. So you can go back. You can listen to some of those, a couple of the episodes we just talked about right there. plenty of good guys to check out there. Funny comedians, Adam Carolla, David Koechner, Greg Fitzsimmons, our rapper buddy Wax, J-Wow, got a little bit of everything, Jim Brewer. So make sure you check those out, guys. I think you'll enjoy them. Thank you, everyone, for listening to The Green Room. We do it here live every week on ShaunTGreen.com.
Thank you for listening to The Green Room. Log on to ShaunTGreen.com to access archive episodes and follow the show on Twitter at Green Room Show. Also check out DocumentaryLabel.com.